I'm calling the meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy to order. Today is Tuesday, February 13, 2024. Time is now 11 a.m. We're joined by Representative Shragi, Representative McKay, Representative Baker, Representative Prox, and myself. I'm Chair Rauscher, and I'd just like to take a minute to thank our House Record Secretary, Cale Brown, and our LIO moderator, Zachary Lawhorn, and my committee aide, Craig Valdez, for all they do for this committee. So before we begin, I want to remind everybody to silence your cell phones. We are joined by Representative Wright at this moment, and or any other electronics that you have. Keep them silent. Anyone in the audience needs to pass a note to the committee members. You can do so through the committee aide, Craig Valdez, and vice versa. Anyone passing notes back and forth to those in the gallery. So today we're going to hear a presentation from the Alaska Energy Authority regarding the Round 13 funding requests for the Renewable Energy Fund. Presenting for us today will be Karen Bell, Alaska Energy Authority Manager of Planning, and Connor Erickson, Alaska Energy Authority Director of Planning, both of which are online today. So if you'll put your name on record and give us your affiliation, you may begin. For anyone, which of you wants to start off, just go right ahead.
Good morning. My name is Karen Bell. I'm the Manager of Planning for the Alaska Energy Authority. I just want to confirm that everyone can hear me okay and the volume is okay for you.
Yes, we can. You sound great. Thank you. Please begin your presentation. Anyone have any questions before we begin? Okay. Thank you. Can you please begin?
I just have one question. Should I share my screen for the presentation, or will the presentation be controlled on your side and I should just ask to have the slides move on?
Yes, you can. We've got the slides on the wall. We've got the slides on the television in front of me. And
okay, great.
So you can just begin.
That's perfect. Thank you so much. So as I mentioned, my name is Karen Bell. I am joined with Connor Erickson, who is the Director of Planning for AEA. We appreciate the opportunity to discuss the Renewable Energy Fund with you today. Our presentation will provide an overview of the Renewable Energy Fund grant program, which will be referred to as REF throughout this presentation. The presentation includes the results of a recent impact analysis conducted for the program, a review of scoring and the evaluation process for applications, a review of past capitalization of the REF fund, and details of the projects recommended to the legislature for funding in fiscal year 2025. Next slide, please.
Okay, you're ready.
Oh, great. Thank you. The Renewable Energy Fund was created in 2008 to provide grants for renewable energy projects throughout the state of Alaska through a competitive grant process. The REF program is unique in that it funds all phases of the project, including preliminary phases such as reconnaissance and feasibility. Pursuant to statute, the program is administered by the Alaska Energy Authority in coordination with a 9-member advisory committee. The Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee is referred to as the REFAC throughout this presentation. On May 25th, 2023, with the signing of House Bill 62, the sunset date for the REF program was repealed, allowing the program to continue in perpetuity. Since its inception in 2008, $317 million has been appropriated to REF projects. There are currently over 100 operational projects and 60 projects in development that were funded in whole or in part by REF. On January 26, 2024, AEA, in concert with the REFAC, submitted a list of recommended projects for funding consideration for fiscal year 2025. Funding all 24 recommended projects would result in a capital request of $32 million. Next slide, please. In 2023, AEA commissioned a third-party impact analysis of the REC program. Key findings from this analysis are detailed on this slide. The report supports the efficacy of the REC program and identifies benefits to Alaska since the program's inception. Some key findings include the displacement of 85 million gallons of diesel and 2.2 million cubic feet of natural gas since the program's inception, a reduction in greenhouse gases. The program has mitigated over 1 million net metric tons of carbon dioxide. REC projects often leverage other sources of funding. So in addition to the $317 million that's been appropriated by the state, other funding totals for these projects total about $300 million. The economic modeling from the impact analysis shows that the REC program resulted in $2.07 benefits returned to residents for every dollar invested. In addition, the REF has created approximately 2,930 jobs. The entire report is available on AEA's website, and there is a link on the slide if you would like to access it. Next slide, please. This slide provides the statutory guidance regarding the eligibility for the REF program. AEA staff reviews eligibility for each application that's submitted. Eligible projects must be a new project not in operation in 2008 and also be a hydroelectric facility, a direct use of renewable energy resources, a facility that generates electricity from fuel cells, a facility that generates electricity using renewable energy, and in some cases, natural gas applications are accepted if they benefit a community that has a population of 10,000 or less people, and that community does not have an economically viable renewable energy resource it can develop. Eligible applicants for this program include electric utilities holding a CPCN with the RCA, independent power producers, local government, and other government utilities, including tribal councils and housing authorities. Next slide, please. The request for applications for this program provides funding limits by project to ensure a distribution of funding over multiple projects and technologies throughout the state. For the purpose of the REC program, a distinction is made between high energy cost areas and low energy cost areas, as well as limits are set for project and phase levels. For the purpose of the REC program, a low energy cost area is defined as a community connected to Railbelt electrical grid or with a residential retail electric rate of below 20 cents per kilowatt hour before power cost equalization reimbursement is applied. For heat projects, low energy cost areas are communities with natural gas available as a heating fuel to at least 50% of the residences. High energy cost areas are defined as communities with residential retail electric rates of 20 cents per kilowatt hour or higher before PCE is applied. And for heat projects, high energy cost areas are communities that do not have natural gas available as a heating fuel. Funding limits for the most recent REC round, round 16, remained unchanged from the previous year. REC funding for projects in low-cost energy communities were capped at $2 million per project, and REC funding for projects in high energy cost communities were capped at $4 million per project. Next slide, please. This slide shows a timeline that AEA followed for REC Round 16. A request for applications was issued on June 29, 2023, with an application deadline of August 29, providing for a 60-day application window. The evaluation process for all applications was completed in December of 2023, and a meeting with the REFAC occurred on January 9, 2024. A list of recommended projects was submitted to the legislature in January of 2024, and if capital funds are appropriated by the legislature and approved by the governor, issuance of grant agreements will begin July 1, 2024. Next slide, please.
Excuse me, can I ask a question? So REFAC, that committee, how many people are on that?
There are 9 people on the REFAC committee.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Please continue.
You're welcome. I just want to verify, are we on the slide that says rep evaluation process stage one?
Yes.
Thank you. The next few slides go over the evaluation and scoring process for rep applicants. The stage one review is conducted by AEA, and staff looks at the eligibility of the applicant based on statute, the eligibility of the project, and the completeness of the application. Applications that pass stage one move on to stage two for review. Next slide, please. For stage two, the rep evaluation process looks at the technical and economic feasibility of the projects. The stage two review is an evaluation of technical and economic feasibility performed by AEA staff from the Department of Natural Resources, and contracted third-party economists. The items evaluated as part of the Stage 2 evaluation, as required by Alaska Administrative Code, are as follows. Project management development operations. This includes qualifications and experience of the project management team, including any ongoing and maintenance operations that would be required for the proposed project. Technical feasibility, including sustainable current and future availability of the resource, site availability and suitability, technical and environmental risks of the proposed project, and reasonableness of the proposed energy system. And then finally, an economic and feasibility review, which includes a review of the benefits of the project and a calculation of the project's benefit cost ratio, and looking at the project financing plan to ensure that there's enough financing to complete the project.
For the record, I just would like to say that Representative Armstrong joined us a bit of a while ago, and I didn't recognize it. So thank you.
AEA has the authority to reject any applications that it determines to be not technically feasible or economically feasible, or does not provide any sufficient public benefit. Projects that score below 40 points in this round are automatically rejected. Next slide, please. Stage three of the evaluation process determines the initial ranking of eligible projects. Any project that passes stage two moves on to stage three. This portion of the evaluation is conducted by AEA staff in conjunction with recommendations by the REFAC committee regarding rank. Scoring for this stage gives significant weight to communities with higher cost of energy and projects that provide matching funds. As required by Alaska Administrative Code, the following items are scored as part of stage three: the cost of energy for the communities benefited, the matching funds guaranteed by the applicant, the project feasibility, which is a levelized score from the scoring that occurred in stage two, project readiness, public benefits, sustainability, local support, regional balance of projects, and past grant compliance. Next slide, please.
Could I ask a question? Just out of curiosity, how many projects fail on average? Do any?
It does vary based on a round. This round, there was one application that did not pass stage one because it was submitted after the deadline. There were four applications that did not pass stage two because they scored under 40 points.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Please continue. Are there any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Please continue.
Thank you. The final stage in the evaluation process is stage four, which is ranking and regional spreading. This stage is evaluated with AEA and the REFAC committee. The final stage gives significant weight to providing a statewide balance of grant money, taking into consideration the amount of money available, number and types of projects within a region, regional rank, and statewide rank. Alaska statute and administrative code provides guidance for the REFAC's role in the REF program. Per statute, AEA, in consultation with the REFAC, develop a methodology for determining the order of projects that may receive assistance. And AEA shall at least once a year solicit from the advisory committee funding recommendations for all grants. Per administrative code, AEA, in consultation with the REFAC, will make a final prioritized list that is then forwarded to the legislature. Next slide, please. This slide lists the current members of the 9-member REFAC committee. 5 committee members are appointed by the governor, 2 committee members are appointed by the Senate president, and 2 committee members are appointed by the Speaker of the House. Next slide, please. The current proposed budget of the state of Alaska includes a $5 million allocation for REC Round 16. The list of recommended projects for Round 16 includes 24 projects for a total grant request of $32 million. There is insufficient funding to fund all recommended projects. The table on this slide shows the past capitalization of the REC fund. As you can see, earlier years of the REC program were funded significantly more than other years. The REC program has been funded consistently for the past 3 years. Last year, $17 million was approved in the budget for 18 projects in REC Round 15. This was the largest capitalization the REC program has had since 2014. Next slide, please.
Can I ask a question on this slide? 2018, there was a reappropriation, which accounted for a negative $3 million. So, I see that there was zero in 2016, zero in 2017. So, where did the $3 million come from? I guess is what I'm trying to understand.
This is Connor Erickson, a director of planning. If you could just give me just 1 minute, I should have an answer here for you. If you'd like, I can answer that question offline as well.
Yeah. If you have it, otherwise, if you need to find out, that's fine.
Next slide, please. This slide shows a recommended application summary by project phase. In round 16, we did see an increase in the number of applications submitted for construction phase projects. Construction is part of 84% of the REC round 16 recommended projects. It is difficult to attribute the increase in proposed construction projects for this year over other years. But there have been a couple of common themes that we've identified in the applications. The intent of the applicants to seek tax incentives provided through the Inflation Reduction Act seems to have incentivized construction projects. Applicants seeking REC grants to be used as match to a federal grant was also mentioned several times in applications. And we have seen some projects that were previously funded by REC in earlier stages, like feasibility, now being ready for construction and still seeking additional funding.
Okay, next Representative slide. Representative Shragi has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Rauscher. And through the chair, I noticed earlier in the presentation, we don't need to go back to it, but there was a note about how we've been able to leverage funds put into the REF with federal dollars. And I'm just curious, based on your comments a second ago, that we see more projects being put forward for construction, partly due to the increased availability of federal funds through the infrastructure grants. Is there any evidence or do we have any knowledge of an increased ability to capture federal dollars? Are there more federal dollars being out there available right now that we'd be able to capture by an increased investment in the Renewable Energy Fund?
Through the chair, what we have seen is there are applications that have been submitted where they have applied for federal funding and do have a required match. If they cannot find the match, they would not be able to take advantage of the federal funding. So in theory, yes, additional investment on certain projects would allow the access to more federal funding. But in practice, some of these programs are competitive. So the existence of the funding may not necessarily mean that federal funding would be awarded. So it does depend, but we do see applicants seeking federal funding and then knowing that they would need a match and looking for a rep to be used as a match.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Prox has a question.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, a factor in deciding whether to fund a project is the amount of federal money available. And then does the operating cost account for the fact that everything is going to depreciate and at some point isn't going to work anymore? And is there enough money to replace that without federal grants? Is that considered in these projects?
Ms. Bell, if you want.
Sure. Through the chair. It really is dependent on a project-by-project basis. One of the criteria that we evaluate is not only the ability to finance the project, but also to finance the operations and maintenance going forward. But it's difficult to say where each project would stand 20 or 30 years from now at the end of the useful life of the materials. So it is something that's considered in the funding and the scoring, but outside of that, it would be a difficult thing for us to control.
Follow up, Representative?
Yes, thank you. It is a difficult thing for you to control, but it is something we have to consider. And is there some way to account for that? If nothing else, there has to be a reserve somewhere if it doesn't work. I mean, if the project wears out and there is no money to replace it, then whomever's relying on that power is left in the lurch. And we've got to start thinking long-term about that. That's my concern.
Is that just a statement, Representative?
Just a statement. We just have to start thinking about it.
All right. Thank you very much. Ms. Bell, would you like to continue, please, on your presentation?
Sure. Okay. So, next slide, and we should be on the slide that says recommended application summary, and there are two tables and two charts. Is that what you are currently seeing?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
Thank you. This slide provides a breakdown by energy region and technology for recommended applications. The greatest number of recommended projects for round 16 are on the Rail Belt, followed by the Lower Yukon Kuskokwim region. As for technology type, applications for hydro and solar combined make up about two-thirds of the recommended projects in round 16. This is a change from what we saw in the previous round, round 15, where over 50% of the recommended projects were for wind technology. A lot of the results of these slides really are dependent on the applications that we receive. As I mentioned, there were five applications that did not move forward to be recommended, but outside of that, we have 24 that we're recommending, and these are their breakdowns by energy region and technology. Next slide, please.
So, Ms. Bell, I guess looking at that chart, biomass and hydro and storage are already defined as renewable energy, correct?
For the purposes of the REF program, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. And next slide, please. This is a map showing the geographical distribution of recommended applications throughout the state. Some of the projects that we are recommending cover multiple communities or an entire energy region. Those projects, for the purpose of this map, are only represented by one point on the map, although we do recognize that they do serve multiple communities. Next slide, please. The next three slides provide recommended projects by rank for round 16. I will go through the list quickly by project, but will not address each column of information provided. Please let me know if you would like additional information for a particular project. In the interest of time, I don't want to read off every single column that is presented, but I would certainly like to address any questions or issues the committee has. The last two columns of this slide provide the recommended funding for Round 16. And the orange line after the third project on the slide identifies the projects that could be funded with the current allocation of $5 million for REF in the current fiscal year 2025 budget. But there is a note that the project ranked number 3, which is the Kotzebue project, would not be able to be fully funded at the recommended level with the $5 million allocation. Also on the slide at the bottom is a link to AEA's website, where we provide a detailed summary report of all applications submitted for the public. Sorry, 1 second, please. Okay, so I'm just going to go through the current list of projects. The first slide has 9 projects on it. These are the top 9 ranked projects that occurred through the scoring of Round 16. The first project, which is the state rank of 1, is for a Ruby, a community solar project and battery storage in Ruby, Alaska, submitted by Tanana Chiefs Conference. We are recommending funding for this project, full funding, with a special provision, and the funding amount requested is $2,008,113. The second project on this list is Solstice Energy. This is a project for the Kenai Peninsula Solar Farm that would provide energy to the Homer Electric Association service area. We are recommending full funding of this project for $2 million. The third project is Kotzebue Electric Association for community scale energy storage and inertia. We are recommending partial funding of this project for $3,675,000. The fourth ranked project is the Alaska Electric and Energy Co-op, proposing a landfill gas combined heat project on the Kenai Peninsula. We are recommending full funding of $1,115,014. The project ranked number 5 is for Igigak Tribal Utility Solar PV. We are recommending full funding at $1,723,709. Ranked at number 8 is City of Pelican Utilities. We are recommending full funding for a relicensing project and restoration project for $650,474. Ranked number 7 is Naknek Electric Association for a solar PV. We are recommending partial funding for this program of $3,137,848. Ranked number 8 is Goat Lake Hydro Incorporated for a Goat Lake storage expansion study. This is a reconnaissance study. We are recommending full funding at $121,250. Next slide.
Ms. Bell, on this slide here, there's a couple more questions besides mine. Line 2. You have your Solstice Energy LLC, it's Kenai Peninsula Solar Farm. I was wondering, the match is $48 million. Where does that come from?
They are currently working with Clean Capital, who previously helped finance the Houston Solar Farm that went live this past year. So the match would be coming from that partner. They did supply a letter of support to guarantee that match. However, if for some reason that match did not come through, the REF grant would not go through as well. So that is contingent on receiving that funding to finish construction.
All right. Thank you very much. We have a question from Representative Shragi.
Thank you, Chair Rauscher, and through the chair. Looking just below the orange line, Alaska Electric and Energy Cooperative Landfill Gas Project. Looks like that's in the Homer area, biomass project. I'm curious, would that reduce this community's dependency on electricity or energy resulting from natural gas usage. I'm just thinking about the concerns in South Central, and maybe this is a small project that would in some marginal way impact our dependency on natural gas. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, I do believe that's accurate. I can provide more specific details offline. I would want to go back and look at exactly the information that was provided, but that is sort of the purpose of the project, so I do believe it would reduce a portion of the reliance on natural gas, but I can provide additional information offline.
Thank you.
Representative Proxas has a question.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm looking at the benefit over cost ratio column, and it would seem like though you would go from 1.73 at the top, and then you go down to some that have zero benefit, apparently. So I'm wondering why projects that apparently provide a greater benefit to cost ratio are below some of the others, and why we're funding a project that apparently has no benefit.
Ms. Bell, please go ahead.
Through the chair. So first, for answering the question as to why there are some projects with higher cost-benefit ratios that are ranked lower, this particular slide and the list of recommendations provided to the legislature are sorted by rank for the project, and that rank is determined by multiple things. So in cases where you're seeing a lower cost-benefit ratio but a higher rank, there's other parts of this project that scored higher. So for instance, row number one in Ruby, Alaska, they have a very high cost of energy that does factor in and is weighed to a greater extent in the application, which would push them up in the ranking. In addition, match being provided for a project is also weighted heavily in the rank scoring. So that would be one of the reasons why the project listed as number two, the Kenai Peninsula Solar Farm, would move up in the ranking. So there's several factors at play there. And it all depends on that final score and how the applications are ranked. For your second question as to why we would consider a project with a cost-benefit ratio of zero, obviously a cost ratio below one tends not to be a good cost ratio. It means that the costs are greater than the benefits. But these are projects that serve other purposes for reducing reliance on diesel, providing benefits, health benefits to air. So these projects do get scored on multiple bases. So although a cost-benefit ratio of zero would result in a score of zero for economic feasibility, there are other things that are being scored. So these particular projects would have scored higher in other areas, allowing them to be ranked as a recommended project. We don't disqualify a project just based on a zero score in one category. However, as I mentioned, we do disqualify projects that do not receive a score of 40, at least 40 in stage two, and that does remove a lot of projects that are considered both economically and technically not feasible.
Representative Prox, you have a follow-up?
Well, I do, just to be cynical. Down at the very bottom of the page, on every page, it says reducing the cost of energy in Alaska. And then we're comparing fuel save, which is not necessarily cost save. And we're funding projects. I don't know. Everything has to be a benefit of somehow. And it would seem to me that that all gets factored into this stuff called benefit divided by the other stuff called cost. And yet that doesn't seem to be the case. I guess I'm not quite understanding how you arrive at that. So the question is, could you please send the link to, I think, on the page it says, oh, no, it doesn't. Oh, it does. The link to your the program that you use to evaluate all these. I looked for that on the site and wasn't able to find it. So could you send that link directly to us so we know we're talking about the same thing?
Ms. Bell?
Through the chair, yes, I can.
Have a response, okay. Thank you very much. And Representative Shragi has another question.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, looking at that Goat Lake Hydro project with a cost-benefit-cost ratio of zero, does the fact that it's in the reconnaissance phase have anything to do with the fact that it has a zero cost-benefit ratio? I imagine maybe it's just too early to really have a good grasp as to what the cost-benefit ratio is. Is it because it's in that exploratory stage?
That's what I was thinking.
Through the chair, yes. For this particular project, the Goat Lake Hydro, because it's reconnaissance, there is not enough information at this time to develop a cost-benefit ratio.
Representative McKay has a question.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for being here, Ms. Bell. So we have all these projects. It looks like most of them are wind, solar. Most of them are wind and solar, it looks like. Does the Alaska Energy Authority go back and follow up on these projects to see if they actually deliver what you think they will deliver? Do you verify that the solar panels actually produce the amount of electricity that you predict they will? Are the wind turbines delivering the amount of power that you believe they were supposed to? Or do you just basically fund the project and say, okay, here you go, good luck? And then my second question is, when we drill an oil and gas well in Alaska, or when we operate a mine, we have to do a heavy amount of bonding to take care of end of life. Like when a well is plugged and abandoned, or when a mine is closed out, there's a huge bond that the companies have to put up. So I'm wondering if there's any bonding that has to be put up to before these projects can be commenced. And then thirdly, my understanding is there's a lot of hazardous materials in all of these installations. Like solar panels have a lot of toxic metals. I believe wind turbines have a lot of toxic metals in them. There's asbestos in the blades. So from what I know about this and what I've read, at the end of life of a solar panel farm or a wind farm, all that equipment has to be dismantled and properly disposed of. And that would mean outside of Alaska, because we don't have a hazardous waste disposal facility in the state. So who pays for all that disposal, or who is going to pay for all that disposal, and has anyone considered that in all of these projects? What happens at end of life? Do you have to be bonded, and who follows up to verify that these facilities actually deliver what they're supposed to? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Miss Bell, you're on the hot seat here.
Through the chair. So for the first question, as far as verifying if these projects do indeed produce what they speculate or say they're going to produce in their applications, we do work with the grantees during the process of construction and having the project ready. We do require quarterly reporting while the project is going on, and then do request reporting several years after. One of the reasons we had performed the impact evaluation that I mentioned earlier in this presentation was because at this point we are collecting information, but we aren't, I would say, making that information actionable. It is one of the things we are looking to improve on as far as using that data and doing some more reporting as how well these projects are fulfilling what they said they would fulfill. But we do make sure the projects are operational. It is on a project-by-project basis, so I can't answer that question without being very general. But we do collect the reporting and follow up with the grantees. For the second question, as far as bonding, that would be very dependent on the project and the size of the project. I do understand the point being made that for certain types of projects, there is a significant cost at the end of the life of that project. That would be something that's considered in the cost-benefit ratio if that was to apply to any of the projects here, because that would be a cost at the end of the life of the project. And we do hire third-party economists to look at those projects and identify where those costs may be. So it would be reflected in the cost-benefit ratio, which is scored. But we ourselves do not require any particular bonding for these projects. If it was the size of a project that would require something like that, it would be something that's considered in the financing plan, in the, as I mentioned, in the cost-benefit ratio, and in technical feasibility. But this, the AEA does not put any requirements on the current grantees for that. And then finally, your third question about the materials being used and how they would be disposed of. I do not have an answer at that time. At this time, I think it would be very project dependent, but we could provide an answer offline.
Representative?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any more questions for Ms. Bell? Ms. Bell, please continue your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so next slide, please, which should be slide 17. These are the next set of ranked projects, numbers 9 to 16 for round 16. These are all recommended, have been forwarded to the legislature for decision on funding, but currently fall below the orange line, so would not be funded in the current allocation. So ranked number 9, we have the Queeflick Windham Battery Project completion for $738,979. We have the AVAC Quinnahock Battery Energy Storage System, ranked number 10, for $443,956, recommended for full funding. We have City of Nanana, ranked number 11, and this is the Nanana Biomass District Heat System Project for funding of $1,223,000. We have the Kangiganak Solar Energy Project, ranked number 12, with a partial funding recommendation of $720,453. Alaska Renewables, ranked number 13, with a request of $2 million for feasibility of wind diversification on the rail belt. We have the City of Homer, Homer Energy Recovery Project, ranked number 14 with a full recommendation of $280,000. Ranked number 15, Athmetulik Tribal Utilities for installation of ETS, integration and commissioning of the RIN project. The request is for $286,227. And then ranked number 16, Southeast Alaska Power Agency with a request for $4 million for grid resiliency. Any questions on this slide?
Any questions? No, please continue, Ms. Bell.
Okay, next slide, please. And this is slide 18. These are the final projects for recommendation to the legislature. I do want to point out that there is a note at the bottom of this slide that does say one of the projects, number 16024, was voted by the REFAC on January 9th to change the rank of the application. The application by score was ranked as number 11, but there was a determination by the REFAC to move that project down to rank 23 due to the potential technical risks associated with fuel supply commitments for the project if it was to move forward. So this is the one project where there was a determination to switch the rank from just a scoring rank, and I wanted to make you aware of that. As far as the final list of projects, for number 17, ranked number 17, we have the Chebec Battery Energy Storage, recommended for full funding. We have Nutson Creek Hydro Project Construction in Pedro Bay Village, recommended for full funding with a special provision, ranked number 18. Akiachak Native Community 200 Kilowatt Solar Energy Project is ranked number 19 for partial funding with a special provision. Nome Joint Utility Systems for Banner Ridge Solar Farm is ranked number 20 for a full recommendation of funding of $4 million. Ranked number 21, we have Matanuska Electric Association for Hunter Creek Hydroelectric Feasibility Study with a recommendation for full funding. Ranked number 22, we have the City of Chignik for Chignik Hydroelectric Power System, recommended for full funding. Finally, at 23, we have the Golden Valley Electric project for the Healy Unit Tool 2 coal to biomass fuel conversion reconnaissance and feasibility study, ranked number 23. And ranked number 24 is Utopian Power Sterling Solar Project, recommended for partial funding with a special provision. And next slide. This would be the end of my presentation. Thank you so much for your time today.
Are there any questions? Representative Prox has a question.
Well, I guess more of a comment that we really need to understand this scoring and whatnot. Because on the one hand, at the front of this, I think they said they get a 2-to-1 return on investment. And if that's the case, then we should quit. We should tell the permanent fund to quit investing in everything else and put it all into these projects. And on the other hand, we're investing in projects that have zero apparent benefit. So there's some confusion about definition of terms that we need to understand, because we're going to be putting money into something and we're not going to be putting it into something else. What goes into these projects can't go into schools. Can't go into roads, can't go into health, can't go into anything else. And I'm skeptical now because I don't understand whether we're comparing apples to apples and whether this is to reduce the cost of energy or to reduce reliance on hydrocarbon fuels. There's two different goals, not necessarily the same goal, and we need to understand that.
Well, I had heard that the ones that are not evaluated very high are not completely evaluated yet. So that could be part of the equation that we're missing. So I'm not giving excuses. It's just the ones that I heard.
Right.
So I just thought I'd reiterate what I had heard. Any other questions? Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Rauscher. And through the chair, just going back to slide... Where was it now? I'm sorry. Slide 12 in the historical funding of the REF program. I can't help but notice the trend, and I had to step out from committee for just a few moments, so I apologize if this is already covered, and if so, just cut me off, Chair Rauscher. But just looking at the history here, significant investments in the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, almost decade of the program. And then we've seen inconsistent investments over the last decade. I guess I'm curious, given the years in which there's been no funding, I'm looking at fiscal year 22, where there was only a little less than $5 million put towards the REF fund. Are we seeing a growing list of need or a backlog of projects that, are looking for funding that we've been unable to invest in? Because of this kind of inconsistent funding in recent years, do we have some sort of historical analysis of how much need is out there? Is that need growing, I guess, is my question.
Through the chair, we have seen several years where there was no funding for the REF program. I was not working at AEA at that time, so I can't really speak to the history of it. But all funding has to be appropriated by the legislature, and there are competing priorities. There may be, years in which the REC program was not funded. There is a need out there. There is a need greater than what we're receiving funding for. Our last REF Round 15 recommendation to the legislature was a total, I believe, of $25 million, and we were funded for $17 million of that. We do limit the projects. We put caps on the projects. So we have $2 million for low-cost energy areas and $4 million for high-cost energy areas. We do have projects that need more funding than that, and then have to look for additional sources of funding in order to have a good fiscal plan to complete the project. But we do put those caps on to really diversify the projects and the technologies that are being funded by this program. So we have, in recent years, seen projects that were recommended and not funded, and projects that were recommended that could only be funded up to the cap. So there was definitely a gap there in funding.
Good, thank you.
Representative Prox. has another statement or
no,
question?
No, not a question. Through the chair, when you say there is a need, what do you mean by need? Do we? What does that mean?
Through the chair, when I mentioned that there is a need, I am mentioning that we are receiving requests for more funding than can be provided or has been provided through the VEF program, or that we're seeing in applications that applicants are trying to stack multiple funding sources to in order to achieve completion of a project because the REF project is limited to a certain amount of funding per project. So that is the need I'm referring to.
Representative Prox?
Follow-up
question?
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, is this as opposed to projects that are half complete and they need money to complete the project, or is this a new idea that somebody has and they'd like somebody to fund it?
Ms. Bell.
Through the chair, I would actually say I've seen both through the REF program. I've seen projects that have presented with an incomplete fiscal plan, and we have not funded them because they did not have a full fiscal plan. I've also seen new projects being proposed at the reconnaissance level, where the amount of funding that they would need to bring that project through completion would far exceed what we could provide through the REF. So I've seen both possibilities there.
Representative, follow up.
Clarify this some more. Thank you. Through the chair, Do you have projects, I guess, in the list that we just looked at before? Do you have projects that are in the middle of construction and they need more money to finish the construction? We've got a lot of sunk cost in there. If we stop now, we've totally wasted something. Do you have projects of that nature in your list?
Through the chair, yes, we do. We have several projects that have started construction for various reasons, have run into issues, whether it be inflation or other things, where the project has not been completed, and they are looking for additional funding to complete those projects. We also have projects that have not started the construction phase and have applied to REF at the beginning of that phase, looking to add REF funding as part of their financial stack for the future construction.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Bell here? From the panel. Representative Schrage has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Rauscher, and through the chair. I mean, you know, to Representative Prox's line of questioning, you know, I think it's difficult as a legislature to go through project by project and evaluate, you know, exactly where they're at and how necessary the funds are. I mean, we could do it, but that'd be very time intensive and require us to probably develop some additional expertise. That's why we have the scoring program ultimately, right? I mean, all of these things are taken into consideration through that scoring system. Is that not the idea there, to have a consistent approach to evaluating this? And I think I saw the advisory committee has members appointed by both the Senate and the House so that we get a really diverse view of members doing that evaluation. So I guess that's question one is, doesn't that scoring process take all of that into account? And then just maybe a follow-up question on that, thinking back to Representative Prox's question around, you know, whether or not we're thinking about the downstream costs of replacement or repair. Is that what is meant by sustainability when we look at the evaluation process? I'm looking at page 9 right now. Is there any consideration to those sorts of factors or concerns? Thank you. Last question.
Through the chair, to answer your first question, yes, that is part of the scoring process. We do try to consider things like economic feasibility, technical feasibility, financing plan, and we try to do that on a fair basis so everyone is judged according to the same scoring criteria. So we do try to incorporate everything in the scoring process. And the scoring methodology was devised with the REFAC committee that is part of their roles in statute. So there is a very robust scoring process to help us rank these projects in a way that that should be usable to the legislature. And then for your second question, yes, sustainability of resources, that does consider the life of the project, the project management team and operations plan, which is 20% of the stage 2 score, does consider, is there enough funding to operate and maintain this project? Is there a training plan in place to train employees on how to operate this new infrastructure? In addition to the fact, as I mentioned earlier, a cost-benefit ratio would consider cost of removal costs as well, and those would be a negative impact on the cost-benefit ratio. So we do try to capture everything within the scoring process and treat projects fairly.
Thank you so much. This has been a great presentation. Thank you, Chair Rauscher.
Thank you all. So I'm going to let you off the hook here, Ms. Bell, and I think there are no more questions. We appreciated the presentation. It was very, I thought it was very good. I got a deeper look at how AEA at least surmises what they're going to do with each one of the applications, how they evaluate them, and then the process they use after it's over. And I do want to thank you for bringing them all forward to us. So right now, I want to thank everybody for coming today, and I want you to know our next meeting will be delayed to the call of the chair following the Thursday, February 15th annual address by U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski at 10 a.m. So we don't know when that'll expire, right? We don't know when that'll be over. But so we will be delayed to the call of the chair for that meeting. And I do not see any other business before us, so I'm going to adjourn the meeting at 11:57 a.m.